Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, March 13th, 2011, and this is show number 303. Well, I had an outstanding week this week, even though I didn't get to spend hardly any of it with Steve. I was on a business trip Sunday through Wednesday, and he was on a business trip Monday through Thursday. For one reason and another, we actually never made voice contact for nearly the entire time. That is the longest I can remember without us doing synchronous voice communication in probably 30 years. We, of course, tweeted each other, texted each other, emailed each other, but still, usually we even manage a video chat when we're apart. Anyway, the reason I had fun was because I had a blast on my trip with Tom Merritt of Tech News Today. He was the keynote speaker for the company conference I was attending. If you don't know of Tom, he's one of my personal heroes in podcasting. I enjoy his work because he's intelligent and clever and funny, well-read, an intense listener and articulate speaker, and he loves all the same geeky stuff we all care about. It was absolutely delightful to spend 3 days with him. When we went out to breakfast on the second day, we were sitting outside around this big fake pond, and I asked him if there'd be any chance he'd do a recording with me for Chit Chat Across the Pond. I'd explained about Bart's extended absence earlier to him, and he said, sure. And he started speculating about when we might have time, and I suggested, how about right now? And I whipped out my Zoom H2. I had, of course, been planning to ambush him like that all along. As a test, I recorded him with both the Zoom sitting on the table between us, and I also used my iPhone in my hand, moving it back and forth between us as we talked, you know, shoving it right in his face. I'd started to think that the iPhone might be an even better way to record than the Zoom, and this test proved it out. You could barely hear Tom on the Zoom recording, even though I had carefully set it to use both the front and back microphones, and I had it sitting halfway between us. Now, Tom was a little bit quieter than I am on the iPhone, but that kind of tends to happen because you're usually more willing to shove it in your own face than you are in somebody else's. But for some reason, it doesn't really feel goofy at all to put the phone right up to someone, so I got pretty even levels, and the quality was excellent. The clarity was excellent. The only problem is partway through, these idiot kids started throwing bread to some seagulls, so there's a lot of seagull noise at one point. Anyway, that's all a tease for the end of the show when you get to hear Tom on Chit Chat Across the Pond. Oh, Tom and I did one other funny thing. He had to go up to his room to record Tech News Today, and so he was going to be missing a cocktail party. You can see where this is going, right? I was forced to bring him a whiskey while he was recording. If you watch Tech News Today, episode 193, An Eclair in My Pocket, about 15 minutes in, 14 minutes in there, you can actually see me on the show. I know, it's silly, I was playing waitress, but it made me really happy. All right, enough fooling around, let's get on to business. Steve Davidson sent in two comments from last week's show. Remember George from Tulsa was explaining to us that if we have Rosetta, the PowerPC applications, they won't be able to run under Lion. He sent in a ScreenSteps tutorial on how to check your applications to see if they're Intel, Universal, or Rosetta only. Well, Steve's first comment was to give us a much easier way than doing a get info on every single application, one by one. It turns out you can get it all through the Apple System Profiler. Of course, to get to that, you click on the Apple, choose About This Mac, then choose More Info, and that'll get you into the Apple System Profiler. Within there, you can click on Applications, and then simply widen the window up to see the heading for Kind. Click on that to sort by kind, and you'll be able to very quickly scroll through the list to see if you have any applications that are still running Rosetta. His second comment is that there's bad news for him. He lives or dies by Eudora. Evidently, that's a PowerPC application. He's been using it for like 15 years, and he's never found another email client that even comes close in terms of capability, functionality, or ease of use. He said that if he had to choose between Eudora and Lion, Lion would lose. There is a slight glimmer of hope. He read on Tidbits that the creators of Eudora have been working on its resurrection. Evidently, they're working on a project they call Eudora OSE for Open Source Edition. It's going to use Thunderbird as the foundation for Eudora Workalike. He gave us the link to the open source site where they're documenting the project. It's over on wiki.mozilla.org/Eudora releases, which of course will be a link in the show notes. You don't have to write that down while you're driving, okay? Anyway, he hasn't tried this out yet, but he's going to let us know how it works when it comes out. Well, I thought this was all pretty interesting because I have to say, I'm not terribly attached to any email product. I switched from Entourage to Apple Mail and just, you know, it was like, whatever, no big deal. And I never understood the ferocious loyalty people have to a certain way of doing things. I know Bart is very attached to the Thunderbird way of doing things, but just doesn't make that big of a difference to me. I've definitely found one mail application that I despise, but in general, most of them seem okay with me. As long as my calendar, contacts, and mail are all integrated, and I can do quick threaded messages and a good search, I'm pretty adaptable, actually. If you'd ever like to do an audio recording, Steve, on what exactly makes Eudora worth fighting for, and I want to hear it in the passion of your own voice, I'd sure be interested. Do keep us posted on this project, though. It sounds like it might just save your precious Eudora. This week, I was talking to a friend of mine who has a customer service job where all day long, people are begging her for stuff and complaining when she can't give them what they want. I suggested that she get herself a copy of Text Expander from Smile. I would then help her create some snippets. Here's how I think it could work. She could have one where she types, "Hey, bozo," and instead of writing that in her email, Smile's Text Expander would expand that into, "I apologize for the inconvenience. Your satisfaction is very important to us. If you could please follow the following steps..." Wouldn't that be awesome? It'd be so fun to write "Hey Bozo" and have that come out instead. She could name all these different snippets so that they made her laugh, but in the end, she'd be sending these very polite and gracious emails. The possibilities are absolutely endless with Text Expander. I'm sure you have uses for it that I've never even heard of. In fact, you know what? That's a really good idea. If you have a creative use for Text Expander, let me know what you've done with it. I'd love to hear from you. In case you're wondering, I have saved, I've used 3,781 snippets since January. I've saved 121,569 characters, which is 6.75 hours saved at 60 words per minute just since January, and it's only the middle of March. If you don't have Text Expander yet, or you're interested in any of the other great products from Smile, this is the last few days you can use the coupon code NOSILACAST211 in all capital letters for 25% off of Disc Label, PDF Pen, PDF Pen Pro, and Page Sender. If you're listening after March 15th, the coupon code will have expired, but the products will still be amazing. Go check it out at smilesoftware.com. Well, next up, we have a review of the Zagmate case/keyboard/stand for iPad from Nightwise.
Hello, Allison. Nightwise calling with a review of an iPad accessory entitled the Zagmate. I've been an iPad 64GB 3G owner since July of last year, and I am very adamant that my gadgets should be very well protected. Because, you know, I take care of my stuff, and I like my gadgets to be nice and clean and sparkly and look new. And also, when I want to sell those gadgets, I make sure that I don't only keep the box, the warranty receipt, and all the packaging, but also keep my gadgets in pristine condition so they have a good value when I sell them off. This is something that is very important when you want to sell your gadgets secondhand to get more money to buy new gadgets. It's an economy. So, since I got my iPad, I was one of the first things I did was order a Zag screen, which is a scratch-proof plastic foil to stick on the iPad's screen, and I ordered a Zogu case. Both products are very good at protecting the iPad against scratches, and the Zogu case is a very, very good alternative to the cheesy, flimsy cardboard case that Apple made for the first generation iPad. Well, now, as usual, we should define a problem. Well, the problem is that when I took my iPad along, I needed to type out texts. Because I write blog posts on my iPad, I was regularly tapping away on the touch keyboard of the iPad. The Zogu case allows the iPad to be slanted in a position that allows for easy typing, but I did get wrist pains when I would type long pieces of text on the iPad. So what I came up with was an Apple Bluetooth keyboard. Very, very handy. And when I took the Bluetooth keyboard with me with the iPad, I could use it like a little computer. A very, very nice setup, very productive. But every time I slid the iPad and the keyboard into the case, something pressed the power button of the keyboard turns on, the iPad turns on, and both batteries are drained. So I was looking for a solution that would protect my iPad and would also serve as a keyboard. So enter the Zagmate. The Zagmate is an aluminum lid that fits around your iPad, around the front of your iPad, and that comes with a built-in Bluetooth keyboard. There is a little flip on the back of the Zagmate that allows you to use it as a stand, so you can slide in your iPad in portrait and landscape mode, and well, the whole setup looks like a very tiny notebook. You activate the battery-powered keyboard inside the Zagmate case, make sure it's linked to your iPad, type away, and when you're done, flip down the little stand, deactivate the keyboard, and use the entire keyboard setup as a lid for your iPad. The fit is very snug, it's well built, and the only thing I don't really like about it is the fact that it scratches quite easily. Of course, the people from Zag would want you to buy a scratch-proof foil for your Zagmate case and give them more money. Also, the iPad is inside the Zagmate case, it's a lid for your iPad, but the back of the iPad is also unprotected. So Zag again would like you to buy a foil to protect that end as well. The Zagmate comes at about, $99. It has a mini USB port so you can charge the keyboard, and it has a hole at the bottom to make sure that you can also connect the iPad dock connector when the iPad is inside the Zagmate case in its, well, protective enclosure. I got the Zagmate case, and the first day I wasn't really pleased with it. The keyboard is pretty small, and the edges of the protective lid are quite sharp. So it took me a while to get used to the keyboard, but once I got used to it, I managed to type up quite a few articles. For those listeners who caught last week's Nightcast KC0049 Storytime, both long articles, 10,000 characters or more, were written up on the Zagmate case. The cool thing is that you can also set your iPad in portrait mode and in landscape mode, so if you're typing up long texts, it's really convenient. The Zagmate has a QWERTY layout and comes with special buttons to go to the menu, the search function, to activate the photo frame, to display or undisplay the keyboard, to power off the display of the iPad, and of course to control the iTunes or the playback of your iPad. Pause, forward, back, volume up, volume down, and change the language settings. All of these hotkeys work. 99% of the applications on the iPad take these functions into account, so all of the buttons work. And all in all, it does help to increase productivity on the iPad. So, overall score, I think I'll give this one a 7 out of 10. I'll deduct points for the fact that the finishing isn't all that good. It's quite sharp. And I'll deduct points for the fact that, you know, it does scratch. It needs a foil to protect it if you want to. It's a funny thing, because it turns your iPad into a netbook, kinda. It adds functionality to your device, and it has turned my iPad from a consumption and communication device into a little bit of a production device as well. The points that I'll deduct are also for the fact that it leaves the back of your iPad unprotected, but, you know, that's just how it is. You need more Zag foil for that. But all in all, it is well done. It is a very nice piece of hardware, and it is very snugly built. The Zagmate, a case slash stand for your iPad that will surely get you... that will surely get people walking up to you asking you questions what it is, because it kind of turns your tablet into a netbook, and it kind of doesn't, and it's a lid as well. So I like the double functionality of the Zagmate. The Zagmate is produced by Zag.com, Z-A-G-G.com, and comes at about 99 euros.
Well, hey, thanks for that, Nightwise. Appreciate your reviews as always. I have to say, though, you know, this whole cover your gadgets with plastic, it just really reminds me of Grandma with a plastic on her couch. You know, sure, when she sold it, it looked fantastic, but the whole time she owned it, it was annoying. I am just not in that camp at all. I like to enjoy my devices. I mean, I'll put a case on my iPhone, that kind of thing. I have a case on my iPad, but I am not going to cover up that screen for nothing. I just don't understand it. It's just to be annoyed by your device the entire time you own it, just so you get a little more for it. It's like, what's the point? I mean, I'll always want to buy stuff off of you guys that do that, but I do not like it. I can't stand it when there's like a screen on an iPad. I just think it looks horrible. I think it feels nasty. Ugh. Blech. I'll just keep calling you grandma from now on, Nightwise. All right. So, you know, I'm a sucker for quick launch applications, right? I've been doing reviews of these things forever. For ages, I was a huge fan of Quicksilver, using maybe 5% of its capacity, but I loved how quickly I could launch applications with just a keystroke or two. But alas, Quicksilver kind of fell by the wayside into disrepair, and I listened to all the fans of LaunchBar from obdev.at, and I decided to give that a try, and I fell in love with LaunchBar. Again, I don't use most of what LaunchBar can do. You know, you'll have to watch Don McAllister's screencast online to find out what can really do. He did, what is he said last week? A 90-minute instruction thing on LaunchBar on that cruise? I cannot imagine. I use it to launch applications, maybe do the calculator, maybe look up an address. That's about it. Well, I'm also a fan of Launchy on Windows from Launchy.net. That does a great job of letting me launch applications with just a few keystrokes. Like any good Windows application, it's ugly, but it gets the job done. So what else do we care about? I gotta say, I'm actually always amazed when I see proficient Windows users using their mouse to drag all the way down to the Windows button, waiting for the menu to populate, dragging up to the programs link, waiting for that to populate, and then dragging over to the name of the application's creator, and then only then being able to choose the application to launch. Jeez, you know, a little command space bar, boom, you're done on the Mac. Yeah. Anyway, of course, back on the Mac, Bart and I have debated back and forth endlessly about the value and demerits of a standalone application to do your application launching versus just using the free and built-in Spotlight on the Mac. While it is free and built-in is certainly an attractive way to go, and it is good to get the command space muscle memory going for when you're in an unfamiliar Mac, I still think it does a dreadful job of finding the application I'm looking for it to launch. So, if I'm so happy with LaunchBar, why am I bringing this up yet again? Well, when the Mac App Store opened, I found an application called Alfred that is supposed to scratch the same itch, so I thought I'd give it a try, finally. We'll start with the easy stuff first. To start up Alfred, the default keystroke is Option Space, but of course you can modify that if you like. Type in Option Space and then start typing the name of an application, and when you see it come up, just hit Enter and you're in. For some reason, the right answer doesn't come up. If for some reason it doesn't come up at first in the list, just hit the down arrow till you get over to the one you want and hit Enter. The very next time you type those exact same characters, the application will come up first. I know, people claim Spotlight learns too, but for the life of me, it never seems to come up with my preferred applications first. I'm constantly arrowing around to make it work. Alfred worked as smoothly as LaunchBar right out of the box. Another thing that's fun to do with these launching programs is to do web searches. I don't actually use it that way often because I've pretty much got a browser open at all times, and you know, Google's right there, but I thought I'd give it a try using Alfred. In Alfred, you type in a search term and hit Alt-Enter, and boom, your default search engine and your default browser is launched and your search is executed. It was lickety-split fast, too. Here's an odd feature of Alfred. Type in a search term and hit Control-Enter, and it searches using Spotlight. Pretty cool. I tested it with the word booger, and I found it 445 times on my hard drive. Do you think I use the word booger too often? I had Steve try it on his computer and only found one hit, and it was on NosillaCast number 282. Oh, well. Anyway, I started poking around in the preferences for Alfred, and I found some more things that looked pretty interesting. I found a section that shows all of the different tricky keywords you can use with Alfred to do some amazing web searches. Want to find out about Al Pacino and IMDb? Just trigger Alfred, type IMDb space Al Pacino, and bam, you're into IMDb. Let's say you're looking for something in your Google Reader and you can't remember what it was or where it was. Just launch Alfred and type Reader space and whatever the thing you lost, and boom, you're in there too. There's about 20 of these special keywords you can use to speed up your special web searches. Most of the Google tools are in there, Wikipedia, Amazon, Twitter, Yahoo, eBay, Facebook, Flickr, even DuckDuckGo. Whatever that is, I don't know what that is. You can even do weather. I'm not sure how many of these I can remember to use, but I'm betting some of them will come in really handy. Want a quick calculator? LaunchBar and Spotlight will do calculations for you, and so will Alfred. I do actually use that, way easier than launching the calculator. I'd open up with my launch bar anyway, so why not? Too lazy to spell? Alfred will search the dictionary for you too. Just type spell booger, and it'll look for you in the dictionary for you. Prefer to actually find out what booger means? Type define space booger, and guess what? Alfred fails to find it. This is very odd, because if you launch the dictionary, booger is actually in there, and Spotlight finds it in there too. I'm going to have to write to the makers of Alfred to discuss their algorithm if it can't find booger, that's for sure. By the way, I'm only two preference tabs through all five so far. This thing really has a lot of fun packed into it, I'm telling you. I tried to set up a custom search, and even though their web-based help files are awesome, I didn't succeed at the one I was trying to do. I suspect operator trouble, though, don't you? If you're a control freak, you can change Alfred's appearance, including removing his bowler hat from the window that pops up when you launch him. There's other appearance controls, the most important of which is one that lets you set the limit of how many results you see when you run Alfred. Before I leave appearances, though, I must say that Alfred in general is very pretty and calm and just kind of pleasing, and it comes up very, very quickly. I'm really, really happy with the speed. Well, remember last week when I mentioned how much I love statistics, like on Text Expander, how I'm always telling you how many characters I've saved? Well, Alfred lets you see how many times you've launched it per day in this pretty nice little graph. They chose this page to put the option to reset Alfred's knowledge in there, too. They explain that Alfred learns over time, and it presents the most relevant knowledge, but you could reset that if you so choose. I imagine that might make sense if you handed your Mac down to someone and didn't want to reset everything. You could just reset it in there. The very last set of options in Alfred are called experimental, mostly about stuff like rebuilding the index. But then there's a button that says, do not press this button. So then I dinked around on the website looking for whether I'd missed anything that Alfred could do, and I found out you can play music in your iTunes library just by typing play, space, and the name of the song. Of course, that didn't work for me, but I can see how it would be fun if you were of the music persuasion. Oddly, it played them in QuickTime, not in iTunes, which I thought was really strange. I started digging around in the extensive and very clear help files, and I figured out that some of the more advanced features were in there, like playing music in a mini iTunes window. Those are only enabled if you buy the power pack to go with Alfred. So I need to back up a little bit here, because at this point in my studies, I discovered that Alfred is free. Seriously, I'm shocked at this. While I've been deliriously happy with LaunchBar, so far all of the things that I use it for, Alfred does it at least as well. Their documentation was so easy to follow that I found myself digging in and really learning all of the things the tool can do, which I never did with LaunchBar or Quicksilver. I'm not blaming the other applications at all, and I know there's a lot more capability, but Alfred is incredibly capable and useful for a free product, while LaunchBar is $35. Now, I mentioned buying the Power Pack a minute ago. If you really get into using Alfred, you can upgrade to the Power Pack for £12, which is currently around $20 US. Power Pack gives you file system navigation, results actions like move, copy, and email files. It gives you that iTunes mini player I was talking about, access to your address book, and more. I'm a little confused, though, why they say you need the Power Pack to get into the address book, because using Alfred to search a name found them right there in my address book. Maybe you can do more with them if you have the Power Pack installed. I definitely use the address book search in LaunchBar all the time, so I'm glad it's there in Alfred too. If Alfred sounds fun to you, I encourage you to go over to alfredapp.com and download it for free. And if you like it and want more, check out the Power Pack. Oh, and of course, like I said, Alfred is available in the Mac App Store too. So I just took a break to chat with the chat room for a few minutes, and they've gone out of their minds. They keep talking about towels, and I don't know what they're talking about. If you haven't been to the live show, you really ought to check it out. It is a lot of fun. 5 p.m. Pacific time, which is actually an hour earlier for the rest of the world than it was yesterday, because we went to daylight saving time. So anyway, but if you haven't been there, it's a lot of fun. Just go to podfeet.com/live. And you can be in there and talk about towels, and I don't know why they're talking about that, but what are you going to do? Well, you know, you've heard from Nightwise today, and he has a crazy podcast because he doesn't play by anybody else's rules. One week you'll get an audio recording, the next week you're going to get a video review, and once in a while you get what he calls a docucast, so you get delivered a PDF file right into iTunes. It's the weirdest show, but I love it. I really do. You should check it out. Anyway, this week he did a docucast all about how to find, subscribe, download, and sync podcasts in a cross-platform sliding kind of world, because that's the way he rolls. Guess how he did this document? With screen steps, of course. He took screenshots, he annotated with boxes and arrows and even sequence numbers, and then he explained each screenshot with text. When he was done, all he had to do was hit export to PDF, and he had a beautiful, professional-looking document. You can see his handiwork over on Nightwise.com. I guarantee that you'll find more uses than you can imagine for screen steps because it's so fun, you're just going to be thinking up reasons to use it. I'm not kidding about this. I do this all the time. I go, oh, hey, I could screen steps that. That'd be awesome. The coupon code for Screen Steps expires this week, too, on the 15th of March. So if you want 25% off Screen Steps Desktop Standard or Pro, head on over to screensteps.com and take advantage of that last chance. Just like I said with Smile, the software will be just as useful and just as cool after that date, but you could save a little coin if you did it today. Well, Tim Chatton of the iPad Possibilities podcast over at iPadPossibilities.com sent us in a review of iSwifter for the iPad. Let's take a listen.
Hello, Allison Sheridan and every New Zillcast listener out there. This is Tim Chatton of the iPad Possibilities podcast and AppAdvice.com. I've got one quick tip, suggestion, review for you on a brand new app that came out for the iPad that I think everybody will want to know about. It's called iSwifter. Now, iSwifter is a gem in the App Store. It's this hidden gem that won't be hidden for much longer. What it is, it's a web browser. It's in the category of games kind of hidden there. I'm not sure why the developers did this. There are some games that you can play with this app as well, but its main use case, I think for most people, is to browse websites, to use as a web browser. It gives you quick and easy access to Vimeo, TED, Vivo, TechCrunch TV, but there is a full out web browser in this app. Now, the cool thing about this web browser is it brings Flash to the iPad in a cool way, in a good way, in a well-done way. This app alone makes people that say Flash is on the iPad, it never will be, something that is not an argument anymore. Because this app does it better than what Android's done. It's better than what the official Flash-supported devices do. So when you load to a website, say you want to visit the NozillaCast live, you can go to ustream.com. You can search for NozillaCast. You can listen to the live audio stream. You can participate in the chat all within this app. It feels fast. It is fast. It runs fast. It does everything. It does Flash-based websites, the UI, if it's just a part of the UI, that is in here. It'll do entire Flash grade websites. It'll do video. It'll do live video. It'll do chat based Flash. Anything Flash, this app will do. The app is completely free. It will ask you to pay for it after a little bit of use. You know, about 60 seconds, they'll ask you, hey, do you want to pay for this? And to pay for it, it's $1.99. And all the proceeds right now are going to the Japan disaster right now. And it's just a fantastic app. Once again, it's called iSwifter. And our days of not having Flash on iPad, not being able to view that content, not being able to be on the NozillaCast on our iPads, those days are long gone. On with iSwifter in the App Store now, and I hope it stays there forever, and I hope it gets better and better as time goes by. But this is the Flash solution for your iPad. Not the iPhone yet, but your iPad. Have a great show. I always look forward to your new episodes, and I hope you had a great time in Florida.
Well, I really appreciate you for sending that in, Tim. That's pretty interesting. I immediately downloaded iSwifter and I gave it a try, and I kind of had a fair amount of differences in the way it worked for me for Tim compared to what Tim did. Now, Tim has an iPad 2 and I was on an iPad 1, so we were wondering if some of that might be it, but the exact experience problems I were having didn't seem like performance problems. I tried a couple of sites that it didn't seem to like. In particular, Ustream played the audio from my recorded shows but wouldn't play the video. A couple of times iSwifter said, iSwifter's unavailable when I tried to go somewhere, and that was kind of weird. Then Tim had me test BlueMic.com with it. That's a site that animates when you touch on things in the menus and it just kind of like blinks. It's kind of cool. And it does also play some videos. And that actually did work well under iSwifter, and that is an entirely Flash site. So I went back to Ustream a second time, and actually I was able to play a live stream from the space shuttle on NASA TV. It's kind of cool when you think about it. You got your iPad, you're watching a guy in space. Actually, they were lying because the shuttle landed on Friday, but it was still pretty neat. I found iSwifter was problematic to try and scroll the browser screen. You can't just flick the window. You can't touch the browser screen. You have to guess where the scroll bar might be on the side and drag your finger on there. By the way, I did eventually go back one more time to try the recorded NoSilicast, and that time it worked great. So it's bottom line, for free, iSwifter may work well for you. And if you really, really want to get into something and see a video, it might be worth it to give it a try. Might be dodgy from time to time, but, you know, just go back and give it another try. One of the times I tried to type in a URL and I made a typo, and it came back and it said Firefox cannot find that URL. So evidently this is Firefox inside there somewhere. Anyway, give it a try over at iSwifter.net. If nothing else, download it just in case Apple finds out about it and tries to get rid of it. Do you drive a Honda or an Acura? Do you live in the LA or Orange County areas? Do you adore taking your car into the shop and having to arrange rides to go to work and back and waiting endlessly in that creepy little room with the plastic chairs and the reruns of Oprah? No? Really? That's not your idea of a good time? Well, maybe you should give Honda Bob a try if it isn't. Imagine instead sitting on your own couch watching the game or geeking out on your computer while Bob works on your cars in your very own driveway. You know, sometimes I think people don't really believe me that he can do everything in your driveway. One time he actually replaced the transmission on my daughter's car right there at our house. Can you even imagine? Do you know how much of the car is taken apart by the time you get down to the transmission? It was amazing. Well, you don't have to believe me. Just give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda Acura or Honda Worldwide. Well, this is a good time to remind ourselves that there are seriously sick people out there who will prey on your sympathies for those impacted by the Japan earthquake and tsunami disaster. They're going to start sending you emails soliciting donations. But just like you avoid clicking on the fake antivirus and other phishing attacks every day, keep your guard up for those even more nefarious attacks. You know, as Bart and Mad-Eyed Mooney always say, ever-present vigilance. Well, the internets are all abuzz with talk of the iPad 2 and iOS 4.3 coming out, but what you might not have realized is that iOS 4.3 is actually a pretty important security update. I gotta warn you, though, it is a huge download. Comes in at just under 700 megabytes, and if you have an iPhone and an iPad, you're looking at two of these downloads. It didn't ever notice the first one, so unless somebody knows a trick to make it only look at the first one, I had to download it twice. So, you know, you're looking at nearly a gigabyte and a half worth of downloads. I'm not trying to scare you off, but just to warn you, you might want to run this one overnight. The vulnerabilities you're facing if you don't run the update affect Core Graphics, Image.io, libxml, networking, Safari, and WebKit packages. Exploitation of these vulnerabilities may allow an attacker to execute arbitrary code or cause a denial of service condition, and we don't like that at all. All right, Apple's not done with you yet, though. They released Java updates for both OS X, 10.5, and 10.6. Again, you're facing the possibility of an attacker executing arbitrary code on your machine or the dreaded denial of service condition. Looks like you don't have to do anything other than allow software update to do its job, though, so run it and be safe and happy. All right, enough of our vegetables with Security Light. Let's have some fun with Tom Merritt. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for chit-chat across the pond, only, we're actually sitting in front of a pond, but I'm here with Tom Merritt from Tech News Today. How are you doing today, Tom?
I'm doing good. Allison, do you need me to go to the other side of the water over there so we can be across the pond?
Yeah, we really should. We're actually down at Disney World, or we think we're near Disney World. We're not entirely sure. Everything looks fake, so we think so.
Yeah, it's like Vegas without the strip clubs. Everything is fake.
You said Vegas with children, though, last time.
Vegas with children, exactly.
This is a clean show. I forgot to tell you that, so watch it.
Oh, I said without the strip clubs.
Okay, there we go. You were originally with Tech TV. What did you do for Tech TV?
When I started at Tech TV, I was a web producer, and eventually, through people getting laid off, rose to be the executive producer of the website. So my job was to oversee all the content that went on the websites that supported the television shows.
Okay, so then when they imploded, then you went over to CNET after that?
Yeah, when Comcast bought us and kept two of the shows and laid everybody else off, I went to CNET, where I started as the user engagement editor, which meant they just kind of invented all this stuff that nobody else was doing and threw it into one job description, like the CNET homepage and help and how-to content. But eventually, I went over and helped started CNET TV and did a lot of video shows and started the podcasts over there, too.
Okay. Well, I did want to tell you that when they took the show off the air, I took my, my cable box. I took it back to the cable company and said, I don't need this anymore because you canceled the only show I got it for. And I literally only got it so that I could watch that show. So anyway, I like the...
The numbers support that maybe some other people did that, too.
Because it completely imploded after that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was monitoring the website numbers right up until the end, and we transitioned over from TechTV.com to G4TV.com in May of 2004. Within a month, our unique viewers had gone, our unique visitors to the website had gone from 2 million to 1 million.
Oh, my gosh. It cut in half.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole going for the cute girl thing and all the gaming stuff, that somehow that just didn't work for me.
Yeah, and they also didn't have a commitment to content supporting the shows. That was one of the reasons I didn't stay with them, because they did invite me to come down to LA and stay with the company, but everything they said was, you know, they didn't care about using the internet as much to support the shows. And I'm like, that's what I do. I'm you know, if you're not prioritizing that, I'm out.
Right, right. So now you're over at the Twit Network, working out of the Twit Cottage and soon to be the Twit Brick House. How cool is that building?
The building's cool. It's an old drugstore, so it's got a lot of space upstairs. We're going to share it with a Pixel Core, a company that also does video podcasts, and we're going to have a lot of space for studios, a lot of space for doing different kinds of sets. And I'm going to miss the cottage because the cottage is so cozy, but there's nowhere to sit anymore. So.
Yeah, it does look pretty small.
Yeah,
if I have one bit of advice to Leo about what he's going to put in there. When he was doing his little tour, the little video he did, he said, maybe we'll put a pool table here. You don't want a pool table where you're doing audio video recordings, right?
Well, yeah, the other thing is it's right next to a club. So we have this webcam that's up, and one day on Sunday, right after Twit, we go to the webcam of the new place, and we hear music just blasting in from next door. But it turns out most of the problem is that they were in construction, and so they'd ripped down all of the soundproofing and all of the wall that would isolate that sound. So there's going to be some soundproofing, there's going to be another wall put up, and it turns out Leo's friends with the people who run the club, so they have assured him that, you know, when he's on the air, they won't be having the private events that they're...
Turn that down! Yeah. Banging on the wall with a broom, right? I love it. Right. Now, you host Tech News Today, which is a fabulous show. I really love watching that every morning.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. How do you do the prep for that show? Because that's an awful lot of content crammed into an hour.
Yeah, well, I get up in the morning and go right to my RSS feeds. I've got a Google Reader set up with all of the sources that I like to check. I mark about 50 stories, you know, to consider out of the hundreds and hundreds of stories in my feeds, and then start looking through those and putting them into a Google Doc. I have a Google spreadsheet open. And I, you know, I've got some categories for top stories, things that are just good for discussion, things that are better for the new, what we call the news fuse, which is just real quick hits. And usually I cut that 40 down to about 15 or 20. And then throughout the day, I kind of keep an eye on those feeds and be putting stories in and pulling them out. And then the real, like, intense prep starts about an hour and a half before the show. I'll start making notes about each story of what I think the discussion points are that we need to hit factually to get the discussion started. Not, you don't want to blow the discussion ahead of time, but you want to say, you know, if you're doing a story about Level 3 and Comcast having a peering dispute, you want to be able to state the facts of that dispute so then you can have your discussion around it. Then to write the news fuse items, grab some emails from people. Jason Howell, my producer, picks the voicemails. Then a half hour before the show, get on a call on Skype with all the hosts.
That's only done a half hour before?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, one half hour before the show. Well, because the hosts, you know, they're just being on for exposure, right? So I don't want to I don't want to make their day any longer than possible. Yeah, exactly. And I also want it to be the freshest news that there is, right up to the moment that we're on. So I want to keep it very close to showtime.
That's a good point. You can't do the notes a week in advance or anything like that.
Exactly. Well, that's one of the things. It's like I get up in the morning and I make this beautiful lineup, right, out of all of these feeds by 10 o'clock. And then by noon, I've torn it all apart because three or four stories broke. And, you know, now I've got to move stuff around.
See, I actually don't use an RSS reader. You're my RSS aggregator. Tom's just going to filter that down to what I need to know.
That's exactly what I do. I'm sitting there reading all the RSS feeds so you don't have to.
I appreciate that. For some reason, I have a long attention span to listen, but to read. One of my favorite Leo quotes was once he said, I've lost the will to pay attention. I don't even want to anymore.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's like one of the reasons I hit on this idea of like an hour and a half before the show going and doing the notes, I was driving myself crazy for a while trying to read and understand every single story before I put it in the lineup, which is just way overdoing it.
Because you're not going to pick all of them.
Yeah, exactly. So now I scan the story looking for the essential elements that can tell me whether or not it's valuable or not. I also just kind of pay attention to what is being blogged and reblogged. So in addition to my feeds, I'll look at TechMeme and I'll look at Google News to see like if there was something that I didn't think was that interesting, but it's getting picked up in multiple places. I'm like, okay, I need to look at that a second time because obviously it's getting some buzz.
Now, how is it you manage, though? A lot of times you'll have a story that really needs a lawyer to answer it, and you just happen to have a lawyer on the show that day?
Some of that is creative lineup manipulation. So a story that might go into NewsFuse because we don't really have all the backstory on it, and we just want to let you know it happened. We have a lawyer on the show that day. It goes into discussion now we can actually spend some time. My formula is those first three stories we do are the three top stories. Those are the stories you're going to hear everywhere. Everybody's going to talk, you know, the iPad 2 came out or whatever it is. But then those discussion stories, those next four stories you hear, those are stories that we pick because of what we know, who's on the show, what kind of discussion we can actually have around them. And everything else goes into NewsFuse, which I have to credit Eric Lanigan, our first producer on Tech News Today. He came up with that idea. He's like, you know, that stuff that we can't have a discussion around, instead of throwing it out, let's put it into a, you know, a quick hits thing so we can at least let people know about it.
Right. So then if you want to go get more depth, but you're not going to pretend you have depth on that topic if you don't, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we want to have an intelligent discussion, not a discussion where it's like, I don't know, what do you think?
I have heard a lot of people do that. It's like, why are you talking? Just don't talk about it if you don't know. One of the things I do on my show is I don't do any kind of predictions. I don't do any news. I only talk about something I have personally used myself.
Yeah.
So that will lean us into our final topic that we want to talk about at some point here. So nobody else helps add the stories. It's just you.
Well, no, you know, I made it sound like I do everything because I'm the only one who does it every day. I don't rely on Jason's the only other person who works on the show every day right now. Relying on Jason to make sure that everything is ready to go visually and audio. So his job is to look at these stories, and if there's a video to play in the video version, find the in and out points that are the essential bits. You know, make sure that he picks the voicemails because that's audio. So and he does all of the editing and post-production. So I'm not leaning on him for story selection. Whoever else is on the show that day does contribute links. You know, when Sarah's on, when Becky's on, they will all throw in links as well. But because I'm on every day, I do the bulk of it.
And you have to be prepared for if they don't.
Yeah, right, exactly.
What I want to understand is, how is it you know about stuff like string theory, too? You throw that out every once in a while. You throw in some physics stuff, you know, something really scientific. Where does that come from?
I've been a subscriber to Scientific American since 1993, and I read every issue cover to cover.
So you're a closet wannabe physicist, is that right?
Yeah, actually, when I was living in Austin, I very seriously considered going back to school and in astrophysics, because I'm really interested in it, but turns out it's really hard.
And there's all this math and everything.
Yes. You know? All these prerequisites I would have had to fill. So.
Well, this is actually a good segue there, because Bart is an experimental physicist, was what his, I think it was his undergraduate degree was in, so, you know, it all it all kind of ties together.
Right.
And and my husband Steve is really into physics, so it's kind of fun when you it's sort of like an Easter egg for the geeks when we hear that.
Well, and you know, that's one of the things that one of the tricks that I've learned is when you know something particular to a subgroup, don't hide it, because most of the time if you throw it out, it won't turn off the rest of the audience who doesn't understand. They'll just either pass over it or think, oh, that's kind of interesting. But those few folks who do, whether it's a thing about string theory or whether it's, you know, some pizza place in Southern Illinois that only you know about, those few people in the audience were like, wait a minute, I know that. They get really excited about it, and you know, it makes them enjoy the show more.
Oh, that's great. Now, how do you do all the feedback that you do? Because you respond to a fair amount of the feedback to your show.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't respond to all of it anymore because we get more than I can respond to. But I do read every email that comes in, and we try to include feedback in the show in a way that is beneficial to the rest of the people listening to the show. And supplements are information. So, I look for people who are really experts in their field who can add something that we can't. Whether they're somebody who works at a backbone provider, or whether they're an experimental physicist.
Yeah.
Or in your case, Allison, you sent me a note for the Real Deal podcast I used to do about how to keep the MiFi charging while tethered and still sharing the Wi-Fi, which is, you know, is one of those things that I guess I could have gone and searched on Google if I really wanted to, but it was so much easier to have you email me the solution.
Just send it right in.
And that was great. And it was one of those, you know, it's like you just can't do everything. And so you rely on that hive mind to make the show better. And the key is like looking for the good stuff, sharing it with everybody, and giving credit where credit is due.
Yeah, you are really good about giving credit. I mean, I actually saved the copy of Hacks that you, the Hacks video you did, because, I mean, you said my name like 7 times. You showed my logo. It was like, I was just like, look, there it is, you know. And that is really fun that you give the good credit.
Right. And again, it's one of those things where nobody else minds. Nobody who's watching that video goes like, well, why is he, you know, giving credit? Everybody's like, oh, well, that person sent it in, they should get credit. And the person who sent it feels much better than if you just stole it and they're like, oh, yeah, that's my tip. I mean, I can't prove it because he didn't say anything.
And to be fair, when I sent it to you, I gave credit from whoever I got it from, but I can't remember who it was. So I did credit the original source.
That's right.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, there is a limit to the credit.
It's like when you get the retweet to the retweet to the retweet. Yeah. You know, you talk about the hive mind. I really enjoy using Twitter for that. I have now figured out that if you get enough followers, it's faster than Google to ask a question.
Oh, yeah. I use it for prepping top five all the time. Sometimes I'll say, like, you know, what are your favorite hacker movies? And then I will actually, like, tabulate the responses on Twitter and Facebook, you know, and make a spreadsheet and use that for my top five. Other times I'll just throw it out there and say, what's your favorite hacker movies? And I'll get a bunch of suggestions and I'll use that and make my own, but I kind of use it as a brainstorming session. I'm like, oh right, I forgot about Firewall. That's a great movie. I remember to put that in there. But either way, it's an amazing resource. And my wife, Eileen, she uses it to like decide what movies to go to and stuff.
Oh, that's actually a really good idea to do that. Now, you do need a certain center mass, I think, in order to do that, but I wanted to know, was there an application, my friend Diane asked me, was there an application to replace all those cards that you get from like the grocery store and Home Depot and, you know, your clothing stores and that kind of thing. And I tweeted about it. And in 17 seconds, Bonnie Face actually wrote back to me and just said, oh yeah, here it is. And I was like, I could not have tweeted that question or, you know, Googled that question in that length of time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you probably, again, like with that MiFi tip you sent me, you could have searched for that, but it would have taken like, I don't, you know, maybe a day.
And also human language. Another one I found was, I was looking for some polling software to replace those little clicker things that you use, because that's pretty expensive. And I tweeted, and it was like a minute and 15 seconds. Somebody said, oh, polleverywhere.com. I was like, okay, and tested it. It was perfect. I mean, my research time was zero now.
Yeah, no, it's the natural language processing of humans is still superior to all others.
No matter what Watson says.
Screw you, Watson.
So, you know, you mentioned Hack 5, or mentioned Top 5. So can you list every show you're actually on? Do you know them all by name?
Probably. I'll probably forget one. I'll think of it chronologically. I do East Meets West on Sundays with Roger Chang. I do Tech News Today every day.
Wait, tell us what each one is, because every time I talk to you, I learn about more.
East Meets West is the show I started with Roger Chang because I just wanted to do a podcast that had no limitations, no boundaries.
Oh, so it's a show about nothing?
Yeah, we don't prep at all. It's the opposite of every other show I do. We just turn on the mic and we start talking for a half hour and we just have a conversation.
What do you talk about?
It changes all the time. Sometimes it's politics, sometimes it's science fiction. It's all over the place. Tech News Today is daily, Monday through Friday. Then on Mondays I do Forecast with Scott Johnson, which is having two people on to talk about their visions of the future.
I love Forecast. Is awesome. What I like is you have no idea what's going to happen next, even though the format's the same, because the guests are different, you never know what's going
to
happen.
It always takes a different turn. I mean, with some things like water wars and grow your own meat seem to get predicted over and over by people, but most of the time it's a totally different tactic. And then Tuesdays is Frame Rate, a show I do with Brian Brushwood, which is all about TV movies on the web or in the theater. So we talk about the technology behind watching this stuff and consuming this stuff. Like, we talk about Hulu, we talk about Netflix, we talk about video codecs.
I love a show about video codecs. You know, that's good stuff.
Video codecs. I don't want to set the expectations.
I actually got excited when you said that.
Yeah. I know. Wednesdays is Triangulation with Leo Laporte. We have big thinkers from around the world of technology come on. Like, we had Kevin Kelly, who helped found Wired. We had John Perry Barlow, who founded the EFF. We had Steve Wozniak. And it's
I have never heard of this one either.
We just launched this a couple months ago, and it's just me, Leo, and one person.
And somebody smart and interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And we just get to ask them questions for a half an hour.
Oh, wow. That sounds really good.
And then Friday, I don't do Current Geek Weekly anymore. That's a show I've actually dropped.
Aw.
But we have Current Geek, which is a 3 days a week show about just the geekiest stories on the internet.
Oh, okay.
So we take one link that's to something really weird and interesting and offbeat, and we talk about that. And then we take a geeky story from a listener and talk about that.
So are these all hosted in the same place, or do we have to scramble around the internet to find them?
Well, I'm not done yet.
Oh, okay, sorry.
It's like, and Sword and Laser, which is the sci-fi fantasy podcast I do with Veronica Belmont, and Top 5, which I do in Revision 3. I have all of my podcasts that I do on TomMerritt.com, so there are...
Okay. Because I think I learned about at least two new ones. In the last couple of days, I've learned about five of them that I didn't even know you did.
Yeah, well, I am always learning about new ones that I do that I had no idea I did.
Well, look, what's on my agenda. I guess I'll show up,
yeah, exactly.
Right? Let's see. The last thing I wanted to ask you about was, why do you think the BlackBerry Playbook's going to be any good?
You know, I don't think it's going to be a big seller. I don't think it's going to save RIM. But I want one because I got a chance to use it at CES, and it was snappy. It was fast, and it does the closest thing that any tablet I've seen to real multitasking, where, you know, a program is actually still running in the background and you can flip through it and, you know, see what's going on, which is one of my big complaints with tablets is, you know, I feel like I'm using a Commodore 64. You know, I have to close out and I get this sort of multitasking where the program pauses while I'm not looking at it, and then when I come back it starts up again. And the Playbook just has really good multitasking. It's really smooth.
Unix operating system?
Yeah. We used to do stories on the screensavers. You know, put an operating system on a floppy disk, and it was QNX. And they've taken it and modified it from the ground up to be a tablet operating system.
Now, tell me if I'm wrong here. I thought I understood that you actually have to have a BlackBerry for a lot of this to work, though.
Well, no. You have to have a BlackBerry for some of the apps that you would want from
BlackBerry. Like email and calendar?
Yeah, exactly. If you want to use the BlackBerry email, you want to use the BlackBerry calendar, you got to have a BlackBerry phone, and then it tethers to
Can
the
you
phone.
Use Google Mail or whatever?
Yeah,
Gmail?
If you go in the browser, use Gmail, you can do that. There's and there will be third-party apps, so assuming presumably somebody will make an email client app and a calendar app that can be put on there. There's also a lot of rumors that it'll run Android apps in emulation, so or not even in emulation, but it'll be able to run Android apps sort of as a layer. So, you know, whether that's true or not, that'll turn a lot of people off, but, you know, I think that one of the reasons that it's not going to sell is because it's small and it's so tied to RIM, but as a device that works, I was really impressed with its.
Okay, well, you do make some compelling arguments. But when I don't know, when I just heard...
That's a huge compliment that you've granted me that.
Well, you know, I'm a giver. I just the idea of having that the audience for this is going to be people who have BlackBerry, so you already start with an incredibly small percentage of the world, and then from that, then also, some subset of them...
The battery life is probably going to be awful on this. Like, every time you ask someone from RIM about the battery life, they either look down and change the subject, or they say, like, battery life's the last thing we optimize.
That'll, oh, right, right. I heard
that'll
they said
come,
that.
That'll come in the end. It's like, that's yeah, not a good...
That's going to work well. All right, well, Tom, I really appreciate you taking the time. I hope you guys could hear us over the birds and the children.
Really make it look like you're by the seashore here at Disney. It's well done.
This place is really freaking Tom out, actually. All right, anything else you need to plug?
No, I mean, TomMerritt.com is what I usually plug, and I already made that clear. So.
All right, thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks, Allison.
Well, I hope you could tell from that how much fun I had with Tom. It was really an opportunity of a lifetime to get to spend so much time with him. He's as delightful as you could hope, and I really enjoyed getting to know him better. At first, he seemed kind of serious, but then he really warmed up, and we had a lot of fun together. You know, it's tough, because sometimes when you meet a personal hero, it ends up being a letdown, but that was not at all the case in meeting Tom. All right, enough gushing. If he hears this, his head's going to get all swollen up, and, you know, we can't have that. Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping to pay the bills, ScreenStep, Smile, and of course, Honda Bob. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions. I've not got any good dumb questions lately. A couple of questions that people thought were dumb, but they were too hard and I couldn't answer them. That's why you haven't heard your question on the air yet. But keep go ahead and send in your comments and suggestions by emailing them all to me at allison@podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter during the week at twitter.com/podfeet and hear all of my nonsense, or read all of my nonsense, I should say. If you want to join the fun at the live show, like I mentioned before, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And don't forget that the United States went to daylight saving time early, and then we go late, so like four times a year. Just go get the application time scroller so you can keep track of that. You'll know what time it is where I live. Anyway, thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.